Welcome back to the podcast. It's great to have you, and thanks for coming back around. We are going full-time back into the normal schedule now that the season has started and practices are underway. We're going to go three times a week with the pod throughout the end of the season, so over the next, you know, five and a half months. And every Wednesday, Gary Parrish and Jeff Goodman will be back and joining me, although we get off to a little bit of a weird start here because we tried our best to get Goodman and Parrish on at the same time, but some busy times ahead for both of them, but Goodman couldn't quite make it for this convo. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a weird podcast. We're going to start with Parrish and do that for about 20 minutes, and then on the back end, we'll have Goodman. So Parrish is up first. How you doing, man?
I am awesome. And two things. I appreciate you blaming the scheduling conflict on Jeff Goodman. And B, you've just basically, and I'm not an expert on podcasts, but I would tell you this, you've just basically invited listeners to hit stop at about the 20-minute mark.
That's true. I mean, those who are unaware, Gary has a daily radio show. And is it Drive Time? Is it technically? Is what you?
I like to refer to it as an award-winning daily radio show.
Oh, okay. I was unaware that you've been taking home hardware. Okay, well, congratulations.
For years now. Yeah, thank you.
But Gary knows what he's talking about here. In fact, it's intimidating to even host this podcast knowing now that he has an award-winning daily radio show.
I actually like to refer to it, if you don't mind, a celebrated ratings bonanza award-winning daily radio show.
Congratulations on that. How long have you been doing the radio show, by the way? Are you at 3 years now? Or
I am in year three right now, yes. Closing in on the end of year three.
You're a wonderkind, that's for sure. But you're right.
Ask me how many years I've been winning awards.
How many years have you been winning awards, Gary?
Three now.
Well, that's just for radio, too. We're not even talking about when you put
Well, do you want to? Do you want to talk about my writing awards and stuff?
Well, it's very unlike you to want to talk about yourself, but feel free to. Like, go ahead. Like,
No.
Get off, man. It's all good. But you are right. I've inadvertently dissuaded listeners to kind of step away at the halfway point of this podcast, and that's clearly my fault.
It's fine. Well, let me take this moment to say, listen, I don't know what Jeff Goodman is going to say on the latter half of this a podcast, but I'm sure it'll be enlightening and brilliant, and you really owe it to yourself, and particularly Matt Norlander, to continue listening throughout the end, although I will be gone now in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, so we've had a ton of content on the site. I've been really proud of all the stuff we've been able to put out. The top 100 list was really the most fun. We had a lot of fun putting it together, and the email chain was so good and so hilarious, but one of our team members was not comfortable with publishing it, so
let's not keep secrets on this podcast. Jeff Goodman was his name.
You said it, not me.
Right, it was Jeff Goodman.
Yeah. So anyway, we also have we're in the midst of finishing up this college basketball fantasy draft. We are going to publish the dialogue from that, but it's totally the PG-13 version of what we had. And even that, I had like censored out some stuff, and we still couldn't publish it, which was too bad. But regardless,
no, we could have published it. Just Jeff didn't want to. He was worried about it for whatever reason. That's the truth, right?
Well, yeah. Hey, listen, I can be totally transparent. I mean, you did add, I'm not going to say what player, but you did say you can run this, but you can't run this one thing about this one person, because otherwise everyone will want to kill me. So I said, okay.
That's fair. But ultimately, just like, let's make sure everybody understands what's going on here. The reason we're not all three on the podcast together right now, that's Jeff Goodman. The reason that we didn't have the dialogue back and forth of our top 100 player rankings, that's also Jeff Goodman.
Okay, there we go. But just touching on – we're going to get to your All-American thing in just a sec. But within the top 100, anything in the aftermath of this list that you want to touch upon, whether you got bombarded on Twitter by, you know, any sect of fans that were unhappy with us or you individually, or if there's just – one or two things about the list you wanted to kind of opine on. I'm giving you the floor right now.
Yeah, I actually think the list was pretty solid. I mean, you can, if you don't mind me saying, I mean, listen, you can debate, you know, whether the guy who's ranked seventh should really be ranked fifth and the guy who's ranked 28th should really be 19th and whether the guy who's 34th is so much better than the guy who's 33rd. And people do that. I mean, it's sort of the nature of list. As you know, you put a list on the internet, people are going to debate it. But those are mostly the arguments that take place, to the extent that there are arguments that take place. And in reality, I like grouping players or teams in groups as opposed to ranking them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, because I think in a lot of instances, and we find this with the top 25 and 1 college basketball folks throughout the season, you have a top tier and then a next tier and then a next tier. And in reality, the team that you've got ranked 19th isn't much different than the team you've got ranked 24th. And yet people see the numbers 19 and 24 and they're outraged by them. And I think you can do that this year, actually, with our preseason poll. I think teams 1, 2, and 3 belong on a top tier level. And then I think whoever you rank fourth isn't much different than whoever you're going to rank ninth. I don't care what the teams are. Just 4 and 9, there's not much difference in college basketball this year when it comes to teams. And obviously, when you're talking about players, whether it's top 100 high school recruits or top 100 college basketball players, I think one probably deserves to be one. I think 2, 3, 4, and 5, and 6 in some order probably deserve to be 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. But once you get down to the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, as you know, as somebody who participated in the process, there can be wild disagreements, you know, between who we actually think should be 20 and who we actually think should be 40. And though there are disagreements, I don't actually think they're irrational disagreements. I think reasonable minds and reasonable people who follow the sport could disagree on somebody who's ranked 20th and 40th when we're talking about 13 scholarship players on more than 300 basketball teams.
Yeah. Part of the fun for me is knowing that we could look at this list in the late January and realize just how off we were on some guys. That's inevitable.
Well, how about this? Somebody pointed this out to me. I didn't even notice it. Cody Zeller was not on our preseason top 100 list last year.
That is astounding to me.
He's number one. He's obviously number one this year. So I wonder if the year before Steph Curry went wild in the NCAA tournament,
right,
would he have been
– No way. No.
No way. Right.
No way.
How about this? Isaiah Cannon. Forget top 100 list. Who even knew who Isaiah Cannon was this time last year? Now I believe he's number 3 or 4 on our list of top 100. So we will miss on some of these things, but that's also the beauty of the sport. College basketball, one of the things I like about it, one of the things I don't like about it is that, you know, we get to enjoy Shabazz Muhammad or that great Kentucky team for about 4 months, and then it's over with. Whereas, like with the NBA, you know, I live in Memphis, and I've been watching the same core players now for several years, Zach Randolph, Rudy Gay, Tony Allen, Mike Conley, Mark Gasol, and like I've watched them grow up, and I'll continue to watch them either get better or start to deteriorate or whatever. But you really get to know the teams very, very well. They don't change that much. In college basketball, we get so much turnover that it's impossible to really get a great grasp on a great team, because that great team isn't going to exist more than a few months. But that's the bad thing about it. The great thing about it is that there are always storylines. We don't always know what they are on October 16th or 17th, but the storylines develop. If we'd have done this a few years ago, we could have talked about who's going to be the most fun players in America, and we'd have talked this and that and whatever. And then Jimmer Fredette, you know, takes over the country, and we get Jimmer fever. Regardless of the year, the storylines always develop. We just kind of have to, in some cases, wait for them to develop.
Exactly. I think that's why I enjoy covering the college game so much, is because you pinpoint it so well. There are things happening every single year. Like, the only ways I ever really get tired of stories is if for some reason we've got something that happens and it's just a white hot sun of an issue for like 2.5 weeks, and then by the end of that I'm like, I've got fatigue. But that's just, and then it kind of goes away. There's no real, like, even Kentucky, which is just like, okay, let's write about Kentucky again, whatever it is. There's always something there that's new, that's with it. And actually, it's why I think Calipari's the perfect man for that job, because whether it's intentional, which I think most of it is, or unintentional, he finds ways to get so many different kinds of stories. And for me, as someone who runs the blog and needs that kind of candy to go up on the site occasionally and in the off season, he's so good at it. I feel that for the people that are actually dedicated to following college basketball and actually really enjoy it, following it is very fun. It's the casual sports fans that, you know, only come around after Valentine's Day, and the even more casual ones that just fill out a bracket and like to watch about 6 total days of the sport in general. I get why they can't fall in love with it because there's so much turnover and all that. But for the ones that actually do follow it, I feel like you're never starving for it because there's always something new. Like even like the niche random stuff. Like to me, I'm in love with the fact that Tony Mitchell is going to play at North Texas again this year. He's going to be a lottery pick. He is nasty, and he's playing in the Sun Belt. Like that just almost never happens to me. That purely that circumstance I think is so fascinating, and I'm wondering if he's going to have like this unbelievable, unprecedented kind of statistical year within that conference.
And how about that he stayed there even after a coaching change, after Johnny Jones leaves North Texas to go to LSU? Typically, even if a kid wants to stay in school or has some desire on some level to stay in school, once a coaching change happens, the kids either A, transfer, or B, just say, to hell with it, let's go ahead and jump to the NBA. Had he jumped to the NBA, he would be a millionaire right now. That's not an exaggeration. He would be a millionaire right now, and yet he remained at North Texas to play for a new coach, and certainly, watching what he's able to do when you can watch it, because you won't have as access to them as much as obviously a power conference school, is going to be a lot of fun. To your larger point about the stories just always being there if you're looking for them, and sometimes even if you're not. I remember when I got this job it was 2008 maybe, or I don't know, summer of 2006 actually. And whoa, the years have flown by. But I remember talking to Greg Doyle, who obviously is a national columnist, CBSSports.com now. But he was a basketball columnist before he became that. And I didn't have the luxury of any help. There was no Matt Norlander on the site, or Jeff Borzello, or Jeff Goodman, or Jerry Palm, or anybody. It was just me. And I was writing every single day of the week during the season. And I can remember talking to Greg Doyle about a number of different things. But I said, okay, like, listen, like during the year, like, because he wrote every day of the week during the year. And so I said, well, I got to write every day during the week during the year. And I said, what do you write about? Like, what do you do? Like, how do you have something to write about every day? And his answer was, you just will. You just will. I don't know how to explain it, but you just will. And I found that to be true very, very quickly. Like, if you're, looking for great stories, or even if you're not looking in some cases, once the season starts, games start to happen, box scores start to come across the web one after another, the days click off the calendar. The storylines are there. You just have to go find them.
Absolutely. And we are just a few weeks away from the season starting, but damn, I'm amped. And I also love how the college basketball offseason is the longest of any major American sport. So by the time it gets here, I'm usually pretty hungry for it to start, and it kind of goes by in a flash. Quickly on the All-American teams that you and Goodman put together, I want to know tell listeners how you guys basically come to an agreement, because there's definitely disagreements that happen naturally. So where's the compromise, and what were some of the biggest disagreements in terms of a guy that maybe you thought should be third team that was first team, or Goodman vice versa? How do you guys blend that? And I guess you also take this into effect when you do the top 25 and one as well.
Yeah, typically the way we do that, and we do the All-American teams and we do the top 25 and one, what we'll do is we will email each other completely independent list just to sort of see what we're thinking. And then, for instance, All-American team, I can tell you this year, I don't have it right in front of me, but I know we obviously agreed on Cody Zeller. We agreed on Isaiah Cannon. We agreed on Doug McDermott. So those three were going to be first team All-Americans. And we tend to like to do our All-American teams as actual teams. In other words, I hate looking at like All-SEC first team and it's seven players and six guards. Like, that's not a team. Like if you look at, all-pro football teams, you don't have 11 running backs. You have a quarterback and a running back and a wide receiver and, this and that and whatever. But it looks like a team. And though clearly the AP doesn't subscribe to that, and many of the preseason magazines and even the conferences do not subscribe to that, it's always been something that mattered to me. Now, you can be a little loose with it. In other words, you can take three guards and move them, one of them over to the wing, or take two forwards and not have a true center. But at the end of the day, you better have, at least in my opinion, somebody who can dribble, somebody who is a true wing, and somebody who's a big. And then fill in the other spots however you want. So we had Isaiah Cannon, who could, be the point guard, obviously, but also could be, play off the ball. I mean, he's a scorer. He's an attacker. We had Doug McDermott, who's a stretch four, and we had Cody Zeller, who's a five. So basically, we were going to be trying to figure out who could be our our other point guard or two guard or three, you know, or wing. That's what we were looking at. And the only places we had disagreements is that I had as Isaiah Cannon with Trey Burke. He had Isaiah Cannon with Phil Pressey. And then on the wing, I don't know that he ever actually had anybody there, but he was adamantly against me suggesting Shabazz Muhammad because he believes, and I think rightfully so, that Shabazz is going to miss a significant amount of games. You know, so then I would ask, so then now we're debating.
Yeah.
And so the debate becomes, what do you think is a significant amount of games? What do you think that is? And he said, well, like, what if he misses 10 games? And I said, okay, fine. Let's say he misses 10 games. That means he's playing by the middle of December. He's still got plenty of time to establish himself as the best wing in the country, because I actually don't think it'll take him more than a week to establish himself as the best wing in the country. And he said, and Jeff's opinion was, you can't miss 10 games. You can't miss a third of the season. And it's, you know, forget for a second that it's not actually a third of the season. He struggles sometimes with math. But he said, you can't miss a third of the season and still be a first team All-American. At which point I pointed out to him that if his big number he thinks Shabazz is going to miss is 10 games, well, Greg Oden missed 9 his freshman year for different reasons, but he missed 9 and he was still a first team All-American. So now I sort of got him in a corner. I just make him establish his opinion, and then I say, okay, now I play the Oden card, and now he's stuck. Then he says, well, no, he just can't. That doesn't matter, because he's very good at just disregarding facts sometimes. And he says, that doesn't matter. You know, I'll take him as a third-team All-American, at which point I go, so you can be a third-team All-American by missing 10 games but not a first-team All-American by missing – I don't understand how that works. And I guess my bottom line was this. I don't want this to be what I think people deserve. I never do that with a top 25-1 in the preseason or any sort of all league team or all American team. I want to take my best shot at replicating what the postseason all American teams and top 25-1 is going to work like. In other words, I'm trying to predict the future. I don't care what people think they deserve now. I want to know what this is going to look like after the first week in April. And my position is this, that by probably way earlier, but certainly by March, it's going to be very clear, at least in my opinion, and I acknowledge that certainly sometimes you're wrong about this stuff, but it's going to be very clear, at least I believe, that Shabazz Muhammad is the best wing in the country. Let's make him a first-team All-American. We went back and forth, I mean, really, like back and forth for 40 minutes, and ultimately I said, I'll give you Pressey on the first team over Trey Burke if you give me Shabazz on the first team over whoever it is you want there, Michael Snare or whatever. And we compromise, and that's how the first team ends up with Isaiah Cannon, Phil Pressey, Isaiah Cannon playing sort of combo guards. We'll put the ball in Pressey's hands, whatever. Shabazz is on the wing with Doug McDermott and Cody Zeller. That's how we reach that decision. But the idea that we just throw these things together – I don't even know if anybody has that idea, but we actually do argue and go back and forth while ultimately knowing, I don't know if it really matters, but it matters to us. We care deeply about it, and we do get to the point where we're calling each other stupid.
Okay, one more quickie, because actually we're at 19 minutes. I can't believe how fast this is flying by. Why have you always – I missed this, but you did 4 All-American teams. The fourth one seems like overkill, though. So why go with 4?
Goodman likes to overkill everything. Have you not picked up on that yet? Did you not, while you were doing you were trying to do an off-season report on some team that you will never write about again the rest of the year, you didn't realize that Goodman likes to overkill everything? No, he just – and listen, I'm laughing about it. And sometimes I like cuss about it because I'm like, come on, man, really? Like, I can't remember. And I don't even know who it was, but there was like some school. He was like, you need to get in touch with so-and-so and figure out how their trip to wherever went. I'm like, really? Like, why? Who cares how their trip went? Who cares if they don't play basketball this year? Like, it does not matter. Like, why are we worried with that? So I laugh about it. And these are things that I've obviously said to his face. But honestly, like, that's what makes him good at this job. You know, so as much as it can be sort of frustrating at times, and frustrating is not the right word, just laughable at times, it's also a positive. And it's why he's good at this job. And it's why when we were going to hire another college basketball columnist at CBSSports.com, I fought, like not fought because nobody was fighting me on it, but I pushed really hard to get Jeff over here because he does overkill a lot, and that's how you get 4 All-American teams and off-season roundups on every school you've never heard of. But I don't know that there's an audience for all of that, but I he works. He works hard, and he cares deeply, and he's really knowledgeable. And so I will take shots at him all the time, and even about this. But ultimately, I'd rather him be that way than not. But if your question is, why do we have four All-American teams? Because Goodman probably wanted seven, and I decided to cut him off at four.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say hello to Goodman right now because I know that he's listened to this first half of this podcast. I know that he has. And he's never going to want to do a threesome podcast again because you were nicer to him just now than you ever are when we do the podcast together or are together in person. And I don't know if I can get him to return the favor. I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's pretty much willing to kill anyone no matter what, whether it's in front of their face or behind their back. But when we record his segment here, I'm going to tell him you were especially nice, and I'll see where he goes with it. So
we'll see. I look forward to listening to it, Matty Norlander, and I will talk to you soon enough.
All right, next Wednesday it'll be all three of us, and we'll touch on our dream teams and draft picks, man. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, buddy.
All right, here we are for part number two of the podcast. Goodman joining me and making time. We're stepping away from the debate, which we can quip on in a second if we want. But before we get to everything, yeah, Parrish did the first part of this podcast, buddy. And
yes,
he was
– That's for last, right? We're saving that's for last.
Well, just a few things here. One, he's – you know, I told him how, you know, you're going to be on the second half, and he said I ruined it for everyone because they were going to turn off the podcast at the 20-minute mark. But he was actually – he was very complimentary of you. I mean, he took a few shots. In fact, I'm not even going to tell you a couple of the shots. I kind of want you just to listen to it, and then you can kind of hear.
I'm skipping over the first 20 minutes. What are you talking about?
Okay. Well, regardless, we hit on some stuff. I don't want to, like, double up on the pod and do stuff with you that I did with him, so I'm trying to mix up our preseason content. But listen, we're recording this as the debates are happening, and I just want to do it. We're not going to get crazy political here, but I'm kind of torn on the debates. Like, I enjoy the fact that so many people have interest in them, but I just don't know how productive all this is. Like, I don't know what I'm really necessarily learning. I mean, I guess I like that there's conversation. I just don't know what the conversation means. Do you pay attention to this stuff much at all or no?
I mean, I'm not a huge political guy, and part of it is honestly because you watch it and you get so frustrated because you don't know what to believe. You just feel like all they do is lie about what, you know, go after the other guy, and I don't know. To me, again, it's just really frustrating, and obviously Romney's a Massachusetts, guy here, and I'm not a huge fan of his, and the more you listen to him, the more, honestly, I dislike him. And Obama in the last debate, to me, he needed like a 5-hour energy drink tonight before this one because he just seemed so subdued. Tonight he's come out with certainly a lot more vigor than I think he did last time.
Yeah. And that's about as much politics as you're going to get on this podcast, listeners. But I did want to touch on it real quick because we are in the moment recording as it's happening, and Twitter is, you know, so eager to make joke after joke. Some funny, but some just trying way, way too hard. All right. College Hoops content. I did a lot of the top 100 player kind of stuff with Parrish, so I won't touch on that too much. But I do want to give you equal time on the All-Americans list. He went through the process of how you guys basically debated back and forth, which that's, you know, you want a real debate. You know, you and Parrish, that's basically what it is. I mean, that's entertaining and informative and plenty of backstabbing, of course. But one or two guys, Goodman, that you guys really disagreed on. He touched on Shabazz. So aside from that.
That was the big one. That was the biggest one is basically, you know, that I gave in to Shabazz to get Phil Pressey on the first team over Trey Burke.
Which will, by the way, I like Pressey. That might, if that ends up like becoming true, that might be one of your all-time great calls. Because I love Pressey's game. I kind of feel like Missouri's got to either win the Big 12 or come as close as possibly as they can to it for him to make it. And I love his game. I don't know if I can picture him being a first teamer at the end of the year.
Well, you know, again, numbers may not tell the whole story.
Right. He's awesome to watch, too, by the way. And I still look forward to it.
You have to watch Phil Pressey to appreciate. I said this last year going in the year, and I'll say it again, that Marcus Denman is a really nice player. Really nice player. And Kimmy English, who I've known forever, is a really nice player. but they were like all American type players. Denman certainly was with Bill Pressey, you know, pulling the trigger there. I mean, again, he just gets so many guys wide open looks. Trey Burke does not do that. And Phil Pressey, the other difference is Phil Pressey can really guard when he wants to. And it'll be interesting to see if he's not the shooter Burke is, but I just think he's a better point guard all around than Trey Burke is.
All right, your freshman team is Shabazz, Alex Poitras at Kentucky, Nerlens Noel at Kentucky, Marcus Smart at Oklahoma State, and Kyle Anderson at UCLA. I just want to focus in real quick on Smart at Oklahoma State because he's the one that most casual fans that even follow the sport, I mean, most people that watch college basketball don't really have any idea of any of these guys except maybe Baz and Noel, but Marcus Smart in particular. Can you give fans an idea of what his game is and does he have the ability to really jolt Oklahoma State, not even necessarily to be a tournament team, but even get them into a position where they could be a 5 or 6 seed? Is he that good, Goodman?
You know who I think, and his game's not the same, but I compare him a lot in terms of what he brings to the table is Aaron Kraft.
Okay.
All the intangibles, all the toughness, the ability to just kind of lead without being vocal, a really good defender. Now, Kraft is more of a pure point guard, obviously. And like I said, their games are different. But the intangibles, their makeup is very similar. And I think it kind of, to me, kind of, you know, translates into just winning ball games. He's not always going to look pretty doing it. But I remember seeing him a couple summers ago, and I was just blown away by how hard he plays, how he does all the little things that lead his team to victories.
Okay. Is his performance tied to Travis Ford's job in some sort of way?
Absolutely.
Okay.
No question about it. If Travis Ford doesn't get to the NCAA tournament this year,
done.
Don't be surprised if he's not done. I mean, again, he's got two of the top maybe 20 players in the country now in Marcus Smart and LeBron Nash. And as long as they stay healthy, they've got enough around them. You know, Olakemi's back. They've got enough that they should certainly be an NCAA tournament team. And again, now it's with Travis Ford's players. And I do feel like Marcus Smart, the recruitment of him and him ending up at Oklahoma State will ultimately save Travis Ford's job.
Okay. You wrote on Indiana a couple times this week. One, you have a feature up on Zeller, Cody Zeller, on the site right now, and you've got a quickie on the blog with Crean not having a starting five in place yet. But I do want to talk about Zeller. Parrish brought up something incredible to me during the first half of the podcast, and that's that we did not have him in our top 100 players last year, which I can believe, but it's still shocking. But we didn't know what he would be. But it's crazy that he's the number one. And I don't even think we debated him. Like, when we get toward the 90s, we're like, all right, who do we not have that we need to consider? And I don't know if we really even put Zeller out there. And he was heralded coming in. So that's a little surprising. But, Goodman, what should people expect of Zeller this year? Because, to me, Indiana's freaking loaded, okay? So is this going to be a year where people might have a false criticism of college basketball where they could say, all right, if Cody Zeller is the best player.
No. Cody Zeller's a stud.
Okay.
Cody Zeller is going to be a legit number one pick. Now, he's not LeBron. You know, he's not some of these upper Kevin Durant, even who went number two.
Right.
But Cody Zeller is, you know, he could be on a Kyrie Irving level as far as a number one pick. A Blake Griffin level at the end of the day in the NBA. They're very different, obviously. He and Blake Griffin I'm talking about. But
yeah.
Zeller's bigger, stronger this year. I think he'll be able to withstand the punishment and the pain. He won't get knocked off balance. He runs the court so well. He can score with both hands in the post. He defends. He needs to rebound better. He needs to rebound better out of his area. He needs to be more of a vocal leader, as Crean told me.
Yeah.
But that's never going to be Cody Zeller. He's never going to be a vocal leader.
Right.
What he is a lead by example guy who goes out there, plays hard, is a great team, you know, guy. And I think his numbers, I mean, if you look at him, I think he averaged, 14.5 or 15.5 last year as a freshman. You know, you could see him averaging 18 and 9 this year. Isn't that good enough to clearly be player of the year, national player of the year, if your team's top, you know, five at the end of the year?
Yeah, he actually, he put up 15-6 a game last year and shot better than 62% from the field. What I think will be interesting to follow with Zeller is he's such a solid all-around player, but he's not a look-at-me guy. And so, and not even just personality. I'm talking about by nature of his game. So when we'll have a guy like that.
It's very understated game.
Yes, totally. And so when you have a guy like that, that's clearly what we expect. Let's just say he's going to be the best player in college basketball. I hope people won't say it's a down year because the best player is Zeller and he's like that. You know, I hope people can see beyond that.
They will. Yeah, I don't think they will. And, you know, the other thing is you look at his primary competition going in. Again, somebody could emerge like Evan Turner did a couple years ago to Ohio State. But, you know, it's Doug McDermott right now. He's not on TV very much at Creighton.
True.
So I think that's certainly going to help him. You're looking at Shabazz Muhammad, who may miss 10 or 15 games, who knows, right now. Mm-hmm. And Nerlens Noel, who's a shot-blocking freak but can't really score and may end up averaging 7 points a game at Kentucky. So you are right to some extent that it's Zeller and then a drop-off, because if you look at all the other guys, there are certainly limitations, whether it's exposure, offensive ability, or an NCAA investigation.
In terms of your final four here, I wanted to touch on your overall predictions. You and me both have Gonzaga, and Gonzaga I'm kind of just taking a flyer on. They got this Polish big man who's supposed to be awesome, so that's playing a lot into it. Also, I'm way too forgiving of Harris, but you have Gonzaga.
Well, you love Elias Harris. You love him.
I'm just I have this issue. It's not even just college basketball. I think it's like with certain players I give them way, way too much benefit of the doubt. Like, I want to see them. Like, I'd be a terrible football general manager, because if my quarterback was awful for, like, 3 years, I'd be like, I need to see him for a fourth year. It wouldn't be a good scene at all. But, okay, so you've got
– you do with Michael Vick right now? You just keep
– well, no. See, Vick I've seen enough of. And Vick is the ultimate, like, tease.
Oh, I hate him.
I know you do.
I can't – honestly, I can't even watch – I was an Eagles fan growing up when I was young. And I'm not an Eagles fan by any means now, but – you know, my whole deal was, you know, Harold Carmichael and Wilbert Montgomery and those guys before you were even, you know, born.
Oh, this is, yeah, you're talking Arabic.
I still kind of, if there's a team I kind of like, and I'm pretty objective, it's the Eagles, and I can't even watch Michael Vick anymore. I can't stand him.
All right, how about this spinoff question? College basketball equivalent to Michael Vick in terms of sexy talent and potential, but just so frequently flames out, and not even current. It can be someone from the past 15 years. Do we have someone that you could make the comparison?
I'd have to think about it. I mean, the first guy that comes to mind to me is like an underachiever to some extent recently is Terrence Jones.
Okay.
That would be the guy for me right away. But again, I'm not putting Terrence Jones in Michael Vick's
spot. Right, I know.
Again, Michael Vick's at a whole nother level of frustration, and I think Terrence Jones probably likes dogs. So
okay. Okay. All right, your final four here is Gonzaga, Louisville, Indiana, Arizona, with Louisville winning it all. Listen, these predictions in October, they're fun to make. Who knows what it's going to happen? I mean, we're basically just throwing darts blindfold and hope
that they – I don't throw darts. What do you mean? I'm not throwing darts here. This is going to happen. Louisville's going to win it all this year.
Okay, so that's not a crazy guess, but did you take Louisville to go against the grain of Indiana, which surprisingly only Borzella took Indiana between us four and Gottlieb, but why Louisville?
I just think, to me, I think they have the same depth, okay? They have a senior point guard where Indiana's got a freshman point guard. They may not have that one unbelievable National Player of the Year award guy, but they've got a lot of guys that can do damage. We're going to see a different Wayne Blackshear as long as he's healthy.
Yeah, I'm waiting on that.
Bohannon is a good, really good piece.
Yeah.
Big, strong. He'll be a little bit better at scoring, I think, in the post this year. And you got Jang, who to me, I kind of mocked when he became eligible a couple years ago, frankly, because, you know, Louisville fans celebrated like he was the second coming, and nice. He has been. He's been every bit as good on the defensive end as just about anybody not named Anthony Davis.
Yes.
Last season. So you've got a shot-blocking freak down there who plays hard. You've got a senior point guard in Peyton Siva who was a different player the second half of last year. You've got wings with Blackshear, Hancock. You've got Montrezl Harrell coming off the bench. You've got, by the way, a pretty good X's and O's guy running that team in Rick Pitino, who, you know, has won national title and did one heck of a job last year getting that team to Final Four.
So yeah, yeah.
I just, again, my take is I like that team as long as they stay healthy. That's the key.
Yeah, well, that's always a wild card with Pitino's teams, and it's not a nutty pick. I'm not looking for you to go into a deposition about why you picked him. I was curious. Siva, I can never fully trust personally.
But again, okay, Siva or Yogi Ferrell, who's a freshman.
I know, totally. No, and you go Siva for sure. Yeah.
You're gonna take Siva,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, the only clear cut edge that Indiana has to me over Louisville is at the center position. And on the defensive end, they don't have it. Zeller's a better player overall, but Zhang will still give him fits as far as defensively.
Yeah. No, Zhang is – I mean, I saw Louisville play in person between the tournament, the Big East. I saw him play, I don't know, like 8 times. Zhang is awesome to watch live.
He plays hard, man. He gets after it. And not that Zeller doesn't. Again, I just think you look down the other you know, positions and you say, all right, Blackshear over, Oladipo, Hancock to Sheehy, pretty much those two, or maybe a wash. You might give the edge a little bit to Louisville. Point guard, you give the edge Siva over Yogi. Christian Watford's the wild card. He's the wild card.
I like him.
At all. I know you do, and I've heard good things. Dan Dockett's raved about him over the summer. Actually, Crean said he was banged up a little bit over the summer. So I found that interesting. But Watford, to me, I've always said, is kind of like Terrence Jones a little bit. You always want more. You want more consistency. He's a little bit frustrating because, again, he shows up one game and is unbelievable. And then the next game, he's invisible.
That's fair. You know, that is a fair point. I wonder if that on that team that benefits him this year. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to need him 24 times this year, and not that that's what they should count on is like, okay, if we get Watford for 14 games, not that's what it should be, but I didn't make the Jones comparison or correlation, and it's definitely a decent point. I'd love to see those two teams go against each other.
That'd personally. Be great.
Yeah. Now you've got Zona Final Four as well, which means you think Sean Miller's going to break through and get there. He's still got, 3 or 4 years left of not getting there before the question kind of lingers in the background of when he's going to break through and make one. But you've got him doing it this year. I know you love Lions. They've got a new guy in Caleb Tarzewski, a freshman, a big boy. But can you just give listeners an idea of what they should expect from Arizona and how this team's going to be different from the one that flirted with the Final Four 2 years ago with Derek Williams?
I mean, I just picked him so I can go back to Tucson.
Okay. I was going to give you a favor and not mention that this is your alma mater, but go ahead.
No, it's fine. They hate me there. So, I gotta somehow be able to go back there and check in under my real name and not an assumed one. But I really do like him. Listen, first things first, I think Sean Miller is a terrific, terrific coach, one of the best young coaches in the game. Number two, they bring in three unbelievable young big guys. Caleb Tarzewski, who I've seen, 100 times, who's a 7-footer. He just plays hard. He really gets after it. Brandon Ashley, kind of a combo forward, probably more of a 4 than a 3, top 10 player. Grant Jarrett, super skilled big guy, also from the West Coast. Step out and shoot it. He can score. He passes. So they've got three of the best young big guys in the country. Mark Lyons is the key because they have wings too. They have Nick Johnson, great athlete who needs to play in the wing. Kevin Parham, who's healthy and led them on their overseas trip and scoring. And Solomon Hill, who's a really good, solid starter. Not a star, but a good number 3 or 4 guy. But again, Mark Lyons, who transferred from Xavier, is the key to this team. And he's an enigma. He's never played the point. I like him for his toughness. I love him for his scoring ability. I've never really seen him play the point and make people better. Can he do that? Because he's got to do that and be a great leader and not go after his teammates like he did sometimes at Xavier. And that's – I question Mark Lyons under adversity. How can he get through that? How can he make his team better and his teammates better and not lose control emotionally? That's the key for me.
Okay. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Arizona. And the Pac-12 in general. And let's wrap it up by just quickly hitting on UCLA. We are just waiting, basically. We don't know what's happening with Shabazz Muhammad and Kyle Anderson, two top 10 talents. Baz is considered the number one by plenty of people, and you could make the argument that Kyle Anderson is a top five because he's a 6'9 guy that loves to play the point, so he's a really unique talent coming into the game. Hunches on when this issue is going to get resolved? I mean, are we going to be having a podcast here right before Thanksgiving, Goodman, where you, me, and Parrish are going to be just sitting here in limbo still with UCLA and not knowing what's happening?
Yeah, I think we could. I think NCAA could pull a Renardo Sidney here and say, listen, we're going to wait it out, and we're going to penalize this kid, and we're going to draw it out as long as we can because we've got some proof here with two financial guys, one that paid for his unofficial visit to Duke and Carolina, the other that gave money to his the AU program that his father was intimately involved in. So I think they could absolutely run this thing out, and we'll see what happens. Because if he misses significant time and they wait and wait and wait, does Ron Holmes, Shabazz's father, decide, hey, listen, the hell with it here. We're going to go overseas.
Yeah,
I think Kyle Anderson, Matt, is going to be fine. Okay. There's a relationship there with him and Thad, his father and Thad Fruchet, that dates back a while. I don't think it's pre-existing by any means, but I'm not sure they're going to be able to prove that any money changed hands between Thad Fruchet and Kyle Anderson's father. I've been told there's no proof yet, and unless something comes up in the next few weeks, I expect Kyle Anderson to be cleared.
Man, I mean, details aside, when you just look at the overview of UCLA since the whole Final Four runs ended and how it's just bled into this year and the past few years, I mean, geez, it's the biggest quagmire for a major program in college basketball we've had, you know? It's just...
Yeah, but it could, you know, again, it could all be erased.
No.
If Shabazz misses eight games, who cares?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's not going to matter. And if Kyle Anderson is healthy and, you know, they got Tony Parker and Larry Drew and the Ware twins and Josh Smith, listen, all they need is Shabazz to miss eight games, and he'll be fine. But without him, defensively, they'll be the worst team Ben Howland's had since his Northern Arizona days.
Okay. Yeah. It'll be interesting. I want it resolved sooner rather than later. But
we're not have time to rip on Parrish. We're out of time.
No, you can totally rip on him. I told him you were going to. So, I mean, what do you want to – listen, this is a podcast. There's no necessary time limit. I was just trying to give equal time. I'm trying to be a worthy moderator for this debate and give you guys equal time.
That's nice of you. That's nice of you. I just want to know, listen, in this wiffle stock thing he plays.
Wiffle ball?
Wiffle yeah. ball.
Oh, is it wiffle stock like a massive – yeah, I get what you're saying. Go ahead.
I want to know, first of all, what age group is that? I mean, it's like, is my 9-year-old daughter eligible for that?
You know, that's a good point. I have never actually seen the competition he's going against, so you could be onto something there.
Number two, can you cork a wiffle ball bat?
You can't cork it, but you know what you can do? It depends on the league or what you're playing in, is you simply you put duct tape near the handle, and so it's got more weight to come around on, and so you get more velocity on the swing. I don't know. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that's what he
you're
did.
You're implicating him. You are. You're already implicating Parrish. I was just bringing it up in one of those things where I'm not so sure. You are actually saying that he's taping the barrel of the bat?
I'm only moderating here, man. I'm just telling you that there are possible ways that it can be done. But listen, and in all seriousness, the fact that he is like this incredible wiffle ball player like astounds me. I need to see it in person to believe it.
He's got that small strike zone too.
That's true.
That's got to help.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, they just got to pitch it in there at what, like, if it's at 4.5 feet, it's at his eyes. So that's actually pretty tough. Yeah.
It's like a 4-inch strike zone.
Yeah, I know. It is unbearable.
I mean,
but
they probably have to throw it underhand just to make sure they get it in an area that it's a strike.
That's true. Yeah. Oh man, I told him you were going to do this. That's too good. But listen, next Wednesday we'll get the band back together and make sure that we can.
I'll be coming up. I got a good trip here. Practices. I got Big East Media Day followed by practices at Carolina, Duke, and NC State.
Okay, so you're hitting up the Triangle this weekend?
I am. Yeah. So it should be good. You know, it should be good. Those three schools, obviously, all somewhere in the top 15 or so, and to be honest, there's very, very little difference. the disparity between those three, you could probably ask, you know, 10 media people and it get, well, 12 media people and get a split
decision. Four for each, yeah.
Four from each. Who knows?
Well, that'll be a good time. I'm the best man at a wedding this weekend. You ever been a best man? You ever had to give the speech?
I have. It was a few years ago, but yes, I had to give two of them, probably, geez, now about 15 years ago. And
how'd that go?
Nervous?
I'm not nervous now. It's all good. I used to be a man of the stage. I don't fear. And I
sing. Will you do a little?
I will not be singing. No, I have. But I have played. I've been asked many times to play and sing at weddings and stuff for like guitar and whatnot.
You know what? You got to do that. The final four. You got to do something for us.
What?
You got to do a routine. Something.
A routine? Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll go find an open mic night. That's the closest you'll get. So
That'll be good. I'll take that.
I don't know. We'll see. See, the thing with the best man speech is, one, you can't make it about you, and you just want to hit that sweet spot, like that 2-minute sweet spot. So
now you can't ramble, you know, and if tears start flowing down your face, you're don't even tell me. If you start shitting,
there's not going to be tears.
Don't admit it.
Yeah, no. And there won't be tears. And we'll have plenty of time to talk about possible tears at my wedding, which is next May. Did you get to save the date, by the way?
I did. Okay. I got to save the date. I'm excited. I punched it in and made sure I'm not going to any AU tournaments.
Okay, good deal. Know? Yeah, that'll be epic. Maybe we'll do a podcast from the post-wedding. My fiance is actually sitting in the room right now as I'm recording this and giving me the death stare. So
you'll love that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's time.
Together. Why don't she can do it as well? Maybe she can moderate.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that would be an amazing time, I'm sure. I think that's the cue to wrap this bad boy up. All right, Goodman, I appreciate that. You can follow him on Twitter if you're not already. Goodman CBS, and it's at Gary Parrish CBS. I did not give him the Twitter bump on the first part of the pod. So thanks so much. We'll be back Friday. We are here 3 times a week throughout the rest of the season. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you Friday.